You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right. Hey, hey, hope you're loving your Monday and you're off to a good start. We appreciate you joining us. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you as always. We all had fun weekends, but we're all excited to be back, and we're excited to hopefully watch some Astros players in action at the All-Star Game, which is going to be in Los Angeles next week. We got the results from that voting, and it looks like it's going to be Jose Altuve to start, Justin Verlander, a 9-time All-Star now, Framber Valdez, Kyle Tucker, and Yordan Alvarez named first-time All-Stars. This was fun, guys.
It's fun. They should still boycott it.
PG is still on the Astros boycotting the All-Star game.
If Alvarez had won the vote at DH over Shohei, ooh, look at me, I could pitch Ohtani, then fine. But no, he didn't. If Altuve is the only starter, I do not want Jose Altuve being booed by a bunch of bloodthirsty, might stab someone in a parking lot after the game, savages from Los Angeles. I don't want him subjected to that. Boycott them like they are the USSR.
It is a bummer that Yordan Alvarez seemingly, we think, will not play in the All-Star game. I think that's pretty safe to say.
He
has that injury with his arm. Dusty Baker said, according to the Houston Chronicle, that it had progressively gotten worse. Here's Dusty talking about that Yordan Alvarez injury that we just found out about yesterday.
The prognosis was better, than we had hoped for, and it was good. He's on day to day, nothing structurally wrong, and that's big. I was trying to figure out if I was going to change my game plan or how to manage without that big bat in the lineup. So, hopefully, it'd just be a few days.
So nothing structurally wrong is good news, and I say we just found out about this. I meant the update because we've known that Yordan had something inflammation with his hand for a while, Paul.
Right. That was Dusty talking about it. That's what's been interesting about this, Vanessa, was going back in time because I was looking to see what Dusty had been saying about this over the week. So that was Dusty talking about Yordan on July 1st and on June 16th too. You saw the same things where they made it seem like it wasn't that big of a deal. But if Alvarez's hand was hurting on every single swing that he was making, then they should have played this differently. Now, part of this could have been on Yordan Alvarez. Maybe Alvarez wasn't telling the Astros that he was dealing with this pain. But, if you're asked it a couple of times by members of the local media, you would think that in the back of his mind, Dusty Baker would think every single day to go check with Yordan to see how his hand is doing. And there's a certain point where if it's nagging and it's weeks and it's been 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or something like that, you have to take it out of Yordan's literal hands. You have to sit him down. You have to play this safe. You've been playing it safe with Lance McCullers. You played it safe with Jake Myers before he finally came back. It feels like the Astros screwed this one up. Now, hopefully this won't be something that is going to make Yordan less of himself in the second half of the year when he finally does come back from this injury, but anything with a hand or a wrist, especially with the way that Dusty Baker has been playing the lineup this year, play it safe. You got other guys that you can put in that DH, and yeah, your lineup won't be as good. That's for damn sure. But if Alvarez has a busted hand or an injured hand or ailing hand or whatever you want to call it, play it safe. And it doesn't feel like they did because they've been aware of this for a couple of weeks.
They usually, nursing an injury sounds patronizing, like they wait too long. You'd rather be safe than sorry. And I do think that the second that Danielle Lerner tweeted yesterday that Yordan wasn't going to play, that he was back in Houston, there were people that were extremely worried. But a lot of people share your sentiment, Paul, that maybe the Astros weren't taking enough precautions, especially since, look, this isn't the beginning of the season. This is before the All-Star break. Right. Yes, you would rather have it now than in September, but we're getting close to crunch time and health. This sounds very basic and very elementary level, but is like the most important thing in the postseason. Like, it's not always the best team that wins. It is the healthiest team.
Very often, it's the healthiest team that gets hot at the right time. And you know what helps you get hot at the right time? Having all your players available to you. And, I've been annoyed at times with the way that the Astros have been handling their day-to-day lineup decisions because okay, you're getting paid to play 162 games. Do all of these Astros need off days that we have seen to this point? At the same time, though, if you are going to be consistent with your game plan going forward, as far as giving guys routine days off, Alvarez is dealing with a hand injury, and you're 15 games up in the division, even with the Mariners playing really good right now. Do you really need to risk further injury with the best hitter in baseball? Because that's what you did here, and it looks like it is now catching you in the tuchus because you did.
According to an article on KHOU.com, Houston's 27 All-Star selections since 2017 are more than any other team in baseball, which begged the question, and I thought I would ask you and Sean this, when are the Astros going to stop being good? And I say that semi-sarcastically, but there are a lot of people that when Garrett Cole was Garrett Cole left, George Springer leaves, Carlos Correa for certain, that it's like, all right, well, it's coming to an end. It's been nice. Shout out to Jeff Luno and AJ Hinch. They did their thing, blah, blah, blah. 27 All-Stars since, I mean, that's insane. When are the Astros going to stop being good? Because at this point, it's almost like they surprise people that they're still this dominant.
I mean, the next generation of Astros stars, it's Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker. You just gave Yordan Alvarez the long-term extension, and you feel pretty damn good about Kyle Tucker. And by the way, Jeremy Peña comes up to the major leagues and has been awesome as a rookie. So
big shoes to fill.
I think that there was certainly a chance that they could have perhaps all of a sudden fallen off quickly, especially when you take a look at the age of Jose Altuve. George Springer goes on to Toronto, still being very productive with the Blue Jays. Carlos Correa leaves, and you think, okay, well, this is just bound to crash back to earth. I got to say, I mean, it's a tremendous credit to, first off, Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, who has never been too aggressive with some of the moves that certainly could have been made. Jeff Luno, who set this whole damn thing up. And James Click, who has done a pretty good job of keeping the Astros ship cruising going forward. That's basically what his job was. Hey, can you keep this going forward? And I guess, Vanessa, to answer your question, until all of a sudden we feel like there is a spot coming where they don't have any talent, I think it's safe to assume that they are going to be very good. The other thing that helps them out a whole lot, unlike the American League East, where you have three teams with money, in both in New York and Boston, obviously, but also in Toronto. And you have a team in the Tampa Bay Rays who does a very good job of basically being the East Coast version of the Oakland A's. You don't have that same competition in this division.
It's a great point.
The American League West sucks. The A's aren't going to be good anytime soon. The Rangers, I don't know what direction they're choosing right now. The only team that really seems like it could be a threat to you in the coming seasons are the Mariners right now. That's really it. This is going to continue. I mean, they are going to be at the very least, wild card contender, I would say, for the next half decade easily. After that, it's really a matter of, okay, are we going to see some more young players like Jeremy Peña popping up out of nowhere?
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, 2 months from today, the Texans will host the Colts at NRG Stadium. We talk a little AFC South, plus ESPN just released a quarterback list of the best quarterbacks, and you're not going to believe who's not on it. You got to hear. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, the Colts and the Texans open the season with each other here exactly 2 months from today. September 11th, 2022 is that date. It's exciting. Hey, the Texans, statistically speaking, should win this one. The Colts haven't won a season opener since 2013, so it'll be interesting. I know that I'm looking forward to that for a lot of different reasons. You guys are, too. Excited to finally have some football back here in H-Town.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see just how far ahead the AFC South is of the Texans at this point in time. I think the one perk that you do have going into this season is a very weak division. I think with the Colts and Matt Ryan under center now, they're probably the favorite. I think Tennessee is going to come back to earth a little bit compared to where they were last year. They were very tough dealing with all those injuries the way that they did, still getting home field advantage. But we're going to find out really quickly how far ahead of the Texans are the Indianapolis Colts. I don't think, though, it's particularly far.
No, I mean, there was a question on Twitter that was rank the AFC South quarterbacks. And it's hard to do because we don't know which Matt Ryan we're getting. Ryan Tannehill, I'm not a Tannehill believer, neither are you. And I think that you're going to see a downfall in his production without A.J. Brown. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, it's hard to tell with, you know, Davis Mills and Trevor Lawrence, they were rookies.
Right.
So even though it's not a good division, and we may not see anybody from that division make it very far in the playoffs because the AFC is so loaded, it's an interesting question on who's the best quarterback in that division.
You got to pick Ryan over Tannehill. Tannehill's done nothing. I mean, he's had a couple of good seasons, but his track record is largely closer to what you saw last year and what you saw in Miami than it is to the couple of years before, where his now former offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, has left for the Atlanta Falcons. He and Arthur Smith, when they were together, I don't know what it was from Arthur Smith, but they were able to figure something out. Maybe it was just the emergence of A.J. Brown, but last year he became the more careless quarterback that we're used to seeing in the past. Ryan can still be a difference maker. I still think when it comes to Trevor Lawrence, if you are assuming Trevor Lawrence will be the best quarterback in the division by year's end, then you are going entirely off of the hype that he had.
Speculation, yeah.
In college. And I don't think that Urban Meyer's the only person who should be blamed for Jacksonville's struggles last season.
Now, that's a hot take, because most people say that he was the problem and that Trevor Lawrence didn't have a chance to develop.
There's no doubt he was a problem, but if you're a great quarterback, you should be able to excel. And while you saw glimpses from Lawrence, Lawrence played poorly a lot. I'm a little excited about the idea of Trevor Lawrence not being this game-changing quarterback like he had been billed for years coming out of Clemson and coming out of high school, too. And then, you know, afterwards, after Trevor Lawrence in the division, really does go back to how do you feel about Davis Mills? As always, I will say, young quarterback, the answer is probably not. He probably is not your franchise guy for the next decade. But do you like some of the things you've seen? I can understand why some people could talk themselves into it.
He and Lovie Smith, two guys, though, that can help you get through a rebuild and it be less painful than David Culley and, God bless him, but Tyrod Taylor, who obviously had a few good games, but that was never going to be the long-term solution. Yeah, AFC South, probably one of the weakest divisions in football. But to me, that's where Texans fans should be excited. Honestly, they should be excited because within the next few years, it's totally feasible for them to win the AFC South.
I don't know. You can't though tell someone, hey, be excited. In the next few years, it's totally feasible to win the
AFC South.
Doesn't
matter, Brian. AFC South.
You see, yeah, that's kind of where you're coming from.
That's Bill O'Brien vibes right there.
You know, for those who don't know, Bill O'Brien, when the Texans were on that 8-game winning streak in 2018, Bill O'Brien was so pissed that the reaction of the town was like, yeah, but like they aren't beating anyone that's good. 9-game winning streak, my bad. I understand how every single Texans fan feels. You are jaded. You are pissed off. You have every right to be. So I don't know, Vanessa. I'm not telling anybody that they should ever be excited. I'm going to tell them, expect pain and misery. And you'll only be pleased because if you expect the worst, you can only be happy afterwards.
Healthy.
That's how I live my life.
The sun will come out tomorrow. All right. Jeremy Fowler and ESPN put together a list of the top quarterbacks. Now, this is in accordance to 50 executives. So they asked 50 executives, coaches, and scouts who the best quarterbacks in the league are. The first couple are not shocking. You have Rodgers at 1, Mahomes at 2, Josh Allen at 3, Tom Brady at 4. Joe Burrow rounds out the top 5, and then it goes Stafford, Herbert, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and Dak Prescott. No Lamar Jackson, which was shocking to me. No Kyler Murray, that wasn't as surprising to me. But no Lamar Jackson was very surprising. I'm wondering if you guys have thoughts on this list, particularly Brady being at number 4 and Lamar Jackson not being on it at all.
I think Brady's in the right spot. I think based off of his two MVPs, Rodgers at number one makes sense, but I do think that playoff performances should be held against you, and I don't think Rodgers has been that good in the playoffs the last couple of years, especially this past season against San Francisco. There's no excuse for the way he played in that game, but he's still up there on the top of that list. You mentioned the right parts to, I guess, raise an eyebrow at, Vanessa. I think at the very bottom, if there's someone that you're going to take out and put Lamar Jackson in for, it's Dak Prescott. Prescott had a really good first 6 weeks of the season or so, 7 weeks of the year, and then things sort of fell off, and I think it's because people realized that he wasn't as comfortable running as he used to be. And I don't know that Prescott's necessarily ever going to be as comfortable running after suffering such a gruesome leg injury like he had the year before against the Giants. So Prescott at 10, I don't know that I buy into that. And I suppose we'll find out this season if Prescott can still be that same guy. But two, with the offensive coordinator that they have, Kellen Moore, who no Cowboy fan likes. Yeah, I'm surprised Prescott's at 10. I feel like he's not that further down. I would say like 11, 12, 13 or something like that.
No, but also, I want Justin Herbert to do well. I think it's a young, exciting team. But the fact that he's on there and Lamar Jackson isn't, the Ravens had so many injuries last year before the season even began.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And I think that you should feel pretty good about Baltimore going into the year. A lot of people like Herbert. I think for me, I know Sean Mapes is a big Justin Herbert guy behind the glass. I saw Justin Herbert play against the Texans, and I wasn't that impressed. I know a lot of other people are, and they're going to say, hey, look at some of the throws that he's capable of making. Great. I don't know. I feel like we're kind of putting him on the same kind of pedestal, though, that we used to put Matt Stafford on, that we used to put Sam Bradford on, where, oh, wow, he's got all this talent, but I don't know. When I'm watching him, I definitely see the talent. I just also see a guy who's not quite as impressive as everyone telling me he's impressive.
Sean Mapes, your thoughts on this list?
Yeah, I'm really surprised that Lamar and Kyler didn't make it, especially over Prescott and Wilson, 8 and 10 on the list. Because, you know, you talk about starting the season hot and fading slowly. That's a knock against Kyler Murray. I feel like that's also a very legitimate knock against Russell Wilson.
Definitely.
And I think Kyler Murray is a little bit better than Russell Wilson at this point, just the trajectory of their careers. And so to have Wilson 8, I guess he kind of gets grandfathered in because he's won a Super Bowl and went to another one. But in my personal opinion, my list would probably not have either of those guys in the top 10 and would have Lamar probably in that 7 or 8 range. Lamar versus Herbert's hard because I admittedly have a bias for Justin Herbert, but I really can't construct an argument where like Justin Herbert is like much better other than like you see his arm.
His arm,
like,
yeah.
You see his arm, it's awesome. But then you can just go, yeah, but Lamar Jackson, no one's had a season like Lamar Jackson's MVP season in 2019.
I'll be the first to say also most lists I just kind of don't pay attention to, but this is they pulled like executives and players and scouts. So this one, I'm like, you know, and Jeremy Fowler's super reliable. So this one, I'm more like, okay, this is the legitimate opinion of people in the league. These aren't like us media heads. Like,
also, I'm more of a tiers guy than a list.
More of a tiers.
Yeah, because like, I mean, do we really want to get into like Rodgers or Mahomes? Who's number one?
Right.
It's like they're both.
I like Josh Allen.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like I feel like the top four is kind of the upper echelon. The next two is kind of the second one. And then from 7 to 10 is kind of like personal preference.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And, you know, the Wilson, I should have been a little harder on that one. Wilson at 8 after the last year and a half. Yeah, you can't put him up there. And it's entirely based off of his track record and the fact that I think people believe that Seattle was holding him back. Which
but
I
if
just
it's based on track
real.
Record, Brady should be number one.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean? So that's just super inconsistent.
Thank you for saying that.
You're right.
Isolate that. Brady should be number one.
Vanessa says Manning that Brady's the best quarterback in the game. Yeah.
It's either that or the tennis grunt, but you can't have both. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. What are things in sports that 100% of people hate? That is in honor of our friends at ERCOT. Plus, Josina's at it again. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right. There really aren't a lot of things that are universally hated. Like most things, people are 50-50 on. You know, 50% of people like this, 50% of people don't. But I can guarantee you that 100% of people in Texas hate the folks at ERCOT. Y'all know what I'm talking about. They're the ones that cut off the power last year. The reason we had that disastrous, expensive, in some cases deadly Texas freeze. And the explanation at the time was that the grid is just not built to handle cold. Well, folks, it turns out the grid is not built to handle hot either.
What?
13 hours ago, ERCOT appealed for conservation of energy from 2 to 8 p.m. today.
Conserve these, you know what?
Yeah, that's kind of the response that most people have after, again, what was just such a disaster.
So they want people to conserve energy from 2 to 8 today.
Yeah, because the grid can't handle heat the same way the grid apparently couldn't handle cold. So here's what it made me think about. What is something that 100% of people seem to hate in sports? Like, the vast, vast, vast majority of people you know can't stand X, Y, or Z. I'll start with something we got from the text line, which was 100% of Houston sports fans hate the Houston you have a problem sign. Agree.
Oh, God.
Those should be banned.
Yeah.
Sean Mapes, Paul Gallant.
I was thinking the college football playoff. No one is like, yep. They nailed it.
Right.
Four perfect teams. Doesn't need to be any more. Doesn't need to be any less. They picked the right four one. There's never a like, yep, they got it. Number four. Love it. So I think the college football playoff
is a good suggestion.
But it's not hated by 100% of people, right?
No, I say
100%.
I think everyone wants it to expand.
Right.
Fair enough. I agree. But here's what everyone really hates. Do not 100% of people hate the NCAA. Here they are.
Yeah.
This institution that acts as if players earning money on the side for themselves is this absolute crime while they're making billions and billions of dollars. Mark Emmert. Who likes Mark Emmert? Who is the biggest Mark Emmert stan out there? The head of the NCAA.
His wife and children.
And who even knows that they are big fans of him, you know? Although his hair is pretty dreamy.
I'm going to go with something that I just think is dumb.
Okay.
Free throw high fives. You don't need to high five anybody after they make a free throw. If you're not making free throws, that's your problem.
I like it. I like being a good teammate, Vanessa. Sorry.
Dumb.
That you don't like to, you know, give some pats of encouragement to your teammates. Texter from the 832 says, referees that try to take over games. Now, in years past, I'd have agreed with you, but I don't know. There's something about it in baseball where I find it hysterical. But I'm probably the only person that enjoys when an umpire turns it into the ump show.
That's you.
Also, I stand by high fives. I think it's a great, you know, celebratory thing. But what I can't stand, you see this a lot in college basketball, is the huddles after free throws or between free throws where the entire team gets together and the senior point guard who's going to be selling insurance in 6 months is like tapping the chest of the number one overall pick.
Slap your hands on the court too for good measure.
That I'm like, stop doing that.
What do people hate as much as ERCOT in sports? Do people hate the wave?
Some people do, but there are others who don't.
I think
hate the wave.
It's pretty close to universal universally people being against it, though, I think.
It's close. It's probably not to the level of, like, your point, NCAA or...
Yeah, because there's enough people that do the wave.
Do it, true.
Right.
Because there's no one that ever that starts a sentence with, in defense of ERCOT, or in defense of the NCAA.
The NCAA, right.
I feel like some people are like, you know, the wave, it's not that bad. Let people have fun.
From the 346, someone texted an umpire, Angel Hernandez. I don't think there's one I think that of all referees, umpires in sports, that he is by far the most despised, followed maybe by what, like Joey Crawford in the NBA or something?
Scott Foster.
He's
Scott the only Foster ref here. Where if it gets announced that he's reffing a game, both teams are like, it's rigged against us.
Right, right. Teddy Valentine was like that.
I really hate it when, and there was a guy for the Texans who used to do this. He was a second round pick out of Miami named Brandon Harris. His nickname was No Fly Zone. He wasn't good enough to have that nickname. But it's when on an incomplete pass that a defensive back had nothing to do with deflecting or defensing, when a defensive back gets up and does the incomplete pass motion in a celebratory fashion, I hate it.
I love it. Also, you mentioning the Texans reminded me of the Letterman jackets.
Those were so bad.
Anyone's like, you know what? After enough time has passed, I'm willing to admit I love the Letterman. No, everyone was like, that's lame in the moment. It's lame now.
Rob Manfred, that's a good one.
Oh,
I don't
yeah,
know anybody
him.
That likes Rob Manfred.
All of baseball hates him for not punishing the Astros enough, for the entire lockout situation, and people here in Houston don't like him for focusing entirely on the Astros and the whole sign-stealing scandal. I would also say Roger Goodell, horrible person. Who punished our Lord and Savior, Tom Brady, for no reason.
See, I think you're probably right that it's the vast, vast, vast majority. I don't know that I hate Roger Goodell.
Yes, because you're a big fan of injustices that are levied after faulty investigations.
He seems like a good guy. I don't think he has the balls to be commissioner. Like, I think that he appears timid and like a scared dog sometimes. But he seems like a nice guy. And you know what? Shout out to Roger Goodell for that punishment against
Brady. You're awful. You're
Daniel
awful.
Snyder, 0% approval rating.
Daniel Snyder is the Urquhart of NFL owners.
Yeah.
No question.
The Commanders in general. Even the team name Commanders. No one likes the
Nobody
team name.
Nobody liked that.
No one liked the
name before that
team.
Was yeah. a slur.
A couple on the text line. Cable providers and MLB blackouts. Yes, I agree with that. It is way too expensive to watch baseball. These days, 100%. And I can't believe that it used to, in NFL games, you used to have the home team sell out to be showed on television. And if the team did not sell out
its
game.
Yeah, blackouts are selfish. They're greedy.
They got rid of them. Another texter says the so-called unwritten rules in baseball. So in defense of the unwritten rules, I do think that the pendulum has swung so far in one direction about having fun that some of the stuff that these players are doing to have fun, there are times where I think that they could reel it back a little bit. So I get why the unwritten rules are there. I think that some people, though, who are married to them to a extreme fault, those people can get attacked.
Yeah, no, because you still get people on Twitter that are like, next time he comes up, they got to put one in his back. So
yeah.
People still like respect the unwritten rules.
They don't fall into the Urquhart category. No. A lot of people hate them, but it's not that universal.
College football realignment. No one's like, this is great.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
Right.
That's true.
Big Ten football. Let's go. USC, UCLA.
Purdue, UCLA. Let's go.
I think
November 15th.
I think sports fans universally hate attention-seeking media members, which brings me to something Paul put on the rundown called Josina's At It Again. Do you care to explain? Because I didn't even, full disclosure and transparency, I didn't even ask you before the show what this was, because It could be a myriad of different things.
So Josina Anderson's been tweeting a lot about the Deshaun Watson situation, and here's what she had to say this morning before our show began. As always, she begins any tweet that involves her providing some inside information with, I'm told. I'm told there are only four women, pause for a second, only four women, four women, I guess that's just not a very high number, currently, and then she randomly puts in quotation marks, at issue, in the Deshaun Watson proceeding.
Huh. At issue? What does that mean?
I don't know, and I don't know why she focused on it being in quotation marks, but it does feel and has felt like she is firmly in the Deshaun Watson / Dave Mulugeta camp for the entirety of this. Anyway, the NFL concluded not to pursue 8 of 12 women interviewed. Quote, a fifth in quotation marks woman. Only fifth is in quotation marks. The league tried to pursue but never interviewed her. The league scope is currently, with an asterisk next to it, limited to 4 per source. She just continuously is putting tweets out there that seem to make it as if some of the people that are testifying against Deshaun Watson should have their testimony doubted. And she's been pretty consistent with that over the last, I would say, week in particular with it. And it's just gross. I get it. You're getting access to information probably from Dave Mulugeta, but...
But it's becoming so obvious, and it's been obvious. And here's the thing. There are other media members who have tried to go down that road, and it does not work out well for them. Because you get the temporary satisfaction of being given information, and then you look like a damn fool. So she needs to watch her back. And also, here's the thing. As a woman, she's making herself look really freaking bad. Because you're, I'm not saying all women have to have other women's backs. I'm not in that camp. We should pursue the truth no matter what gender a person is. But she's just not helping herself, and it's become to the point to where, look, I'm sorry. Unless Adam Schefter, Tom Pelissero, Ian Rappaport, I don't know if that's the big three, but unless they report something, one of them is going to report something if it's accurate. It may be Ian first, it may be Tom first, it may be Schefter first. Occasionally, Jay Glazer gets in there. And you know what? Let's add a woman to that, Diana Russini from ESPN. Diana is always on it as well. But it's to the point to where none of those five are tweeting the things that Josina's tweeting. Why do you think that is?
Because they probably know how to govern what is
they use what's
news.
Called discernment. And yeah, so she's just
word.
Yeah, thank you. That was a good word. Thank you. That was a good word. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to dig into our sports media nerd segment as well as our famous garbage time segment. But first, Paul is going to tell you about PIN.
The Passive Investor Network, baby. Look, you want to make money. We all want to make money. Money is fun. And one of the ways you can make money, guess what? It's through real estate investment. And that's what my friends at the Passive Investor Network do with you. They sit down with you and they personalize a five-year plan for you so that you, your family, you're going to be able to make some money in real estate down the road. You might be thinking to yourself, sounds like a Ponzi scheme, Paul. Hey, I don't know that I have the money right now to get this done. Well, guess what? That's why you got to meet with the Passive Investor Network. They're going to walk you through it and they'll personalize a plan for you. I know you're nervous about putting some extra money into something that you don't know the future of. Let them talk to you at the very least about it at first. And here's what the Passive Investor Network does. They scout around Houston looking for parts of town that they feel like are going to be beautiful down the road, but maybe aren't looking so hot right now. They invest in those properties and they flip them and they make them look fantastic. And you get to see them on their bus tours. PassiveInvestor.net is where you go to register for one of those bus tours. Enter promo code ESPN to go on the bus tour for free, and you'll see how the Passive Investor Network process works, the PIN process. It's PassiveInvestor.net, promo code ESPN for that bus tour. PassiveInvestor.net, the Passive Investor Network.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're closing out a Monday by doing a little sports media nerd segment. Robert Griffin III is apparently replacing Randy Moss on Monday Night Football. Randy Moss apparently asked for his hours to be reduced. He didn't want to travel as much. He didn't as many assignments.
That's the American dream.
That's a baller move.
Have the power to say, yeah, I want to do less.
And make the same amount of money. Right. Yes. And not only that, but I want to go from working 2 days a week to one, because he's still going to be on Sunday NFL Countdown alongside Sam Ponder and the crew. But now will not be on Monday Night Football.
Those probably are a pretty long 2 days.
No, I mean, and when you include travel, it's actually more like 4 days.
Right.
Like, to be fair, it's more like 4 days, and he has kids, whatever.
And do you think it was that Buffalo-New England game where it was like 2 degrees
yes.
and the wind was blowing? There were,
yes.
He was miserable.
He was sitting there, he's like, I cannot keep doing this. I'm Randy Moss.
I was miserable watching that. That might have been the, like, if you were in the stadium for that game, it's cold and that wind is coming. Like, there's nowhere to hide. And imagine you're just standing on the sidelines and you're wearing, like, a coat. You're screwed.
Sarah Walsh, who reports for NFL Network, she used to work for ESPN. She always tweets and posts about how her, like, main phobia is being cold. When she was on the sidelines last year, she had a heated vest. I think it had like a battery pack in it or something. That is the kind, like, if I were Randy Moss and it's like, yeah, screw you, I'm Randy Moss, I'm not going to be this cold. I need a heated vest. But Robert Griffin III replacing him is interesting because RG3 just said the other day that he's still in football shape. Did you guys see that? Where he was like staying ready for a possible return to the league?
Sorry, I had just something pop up on my computer.
Yeah,
all of a sudden.
No reaction. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
about
no,
that's
okay. Robert Griffin III had said that he was possibly staying in football shape for a return,
yeah.
Which
Good
is why
God.
I was surprised.
No, he's in denial. And look, I think I would be in denial too. But it's been a really long time, dude. Like, and we've all come to a point in our lives where we realize we're not that guy anymore. Like me, flag football legend. Still am that, but am I as much of a legend as I used to be? I don't know. It's been a really long time for RG3, though, where the last we saw him in the league, he was a backup, and he looked pretty bad in relief duty during one of those COVID-19 games, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was in 2020. He came into a game, and oh my God, like he really, really looked sloppy in that game.
All right, other NFL media news. Jamie Erdl has been announced as the new host for Good Morning Football. I love that morning show, and they've been slacking. I get that it's the off season, but they were off all of last week. Then a couple weeks before that, they were off for that entire week.
Hell yeah.
And then they've had just like a bunch of substitute hosts and weird panels. And I'm old, okay, so I need my morning sports shows. I still need that. I know most people my age don't, but I do. Give me some continuity.
I get take as many days off as you need during the off season. Take them off.
Yeah, just like Randy Moss can take off as much time as he can, so can Kyle Brandt and Peter Schrager.
Yeah. Come on.
They're the Randy Moss of NFL team.
Seriously.
Sunday Ticket is most likely moving to streaming per Roger Goodell, and that decision where it will air or be streamed, I guess, will be announced later in the fall.
Okay.
Hopefully not too late in the fall.
Here's what's interesting about NFL Sunday Ticket. I think that you still have the option to purchase Sunday Ticket through online services, but just you buy it through DirecTV. You just don't need a satellite or something like that. Because I've been debating doing it for this coming NFL season, so I'll be able to watch the occasional game that I want to. But, I mean, this was a long time coming.
Yeah, rest in peace to DirecTV. That thing's gone, right?
Oh, yeah, you ain't kidding. It is gone. When my parents divorced and I moved to Florida with my mom, one of the reasons that I agreed to move to Florida, not kidding, was because assuming that I did all my chores, oh my God, I would get NFL Sunday Ticket in the little garage that we had. And I would be allowed to watch the Patriots and each one of their games on it. So for 1 year, I did all my chores, and then I stopped doing them the next year, and I lost NFL Sunday Ticket. It was a lot of money.
Actually, the most Paul story ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great, though. I got to see a couple Super Bowl runs in Florida.
Yeah, RIP to DirecTV. That thing's
probably
definitely
dead, yeah.
It's definitely dead. All right, it is now time for a segment we call Garbage Time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So I wish that Elon Musk wasn't so powerful, but he is, to where he's affecting the stock market every single day. Twitter shares fell 6% today, wiping nearly 1.8 billion off the company's market value. Why? Because on Friday, Elon Musk's attorney notified Twitter's board that he wants to cancel his purchase of Twitter. Musk, of course, has been posting memes mocking Twitter management over the deal's demise. I don't know the details on this, other than Musk has basically said that it's because of the number. He's shocked by the number of bots and fake accounts.
There's a lot.
And says that the company isn't truthful.
Definitely are a lot of those. Part of me wonders if this saga is actually done, though, because you saw how much the price went down. If he says publicly he's not going to buy something, what's to prevent him from going back and trying to buy it again? You know, like I don't think anything's out completely at this point in time. So I guess we could be talking about Elon Musk buying Twitter at some point in the next couple of months still. I don't know. Sometimes I see these negotiating ploys, Vanessa, where, oh, this person's out on deal X, and then all of a sudden they go back to it. I don't know that I buy that he's out.
I don't buy it either. Part of me thought that this was all just a PR thing, but when you look at how much the shares were impacted, you have to think that if it's a PR thing, it's on one side. Because I don't think Twitter would want their shares to drop that way. A Chinese brand, once dubbed the Hermes? I don't know how you pronounce it. Hermes?
No?
Of ice cream has come under fire after internet users said some of its products do not melt, even when baked with a blowtorch.
I don't know. That seems like it's good. I hate it when ice cream melts. I don't like the soft serve stuff.
Ooh, I love soft serve.
I can't do soft serve. Ooh. Soft serve is, I don't know what it is about it, but I like the, I like the hard texture.
You like the hard texture. Sean, what ice cream do you prefer?
Well, not this one because, like you said, you can blowtorch it and it doesn't melt.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're supposed to eat this.
Makes your stomach stronger.
You're supposed to chew it like it's glass?
Yeah.
Like,
is this the way that Chinese like their ice? Like, that's a legitimate question. Do they like that food?
Probably not so unmeltable that, like, with, I don't know. How hot do blowtorches get? Like a million degrees?
Yeah.
It doesn't melt?
Very hot. That's kind of like, have you guys ever seen the people that leave McDonald's out for like 5 years? And there's no change in the burgers and fries. Have you seen that?
I have seen that.
Yeah, where people are like, this is proof that it's not real food. And it's like, well, yeah, it's not real food.
Yeah,
nobody goes to McDonald's for real
proof.
Food.
Yeah. I didn't need proof.
There is something about, in China, people eat things not necessarily for the taste, but they eat it for the texture. One of my buddies lived in China. He was like a assistant basketball coach for a Chinese basketball team for a couple of years. And he told me that one of the things that is eaten on the regular in China, they'll eat chicken feet. And they're like just basically fried to a point where it's just super crunchy and crispy. And that there's not a lot of taste to it, but the texture is something that people like to eat for. So maybe that's why this ice cream is basically frozen and can maybe needs to be chewed like it's
so
glass.
Weird. This next story blew my mind, but I think it has the potential to be really funny. So there's a guy on TikTok who has over 2 million followers because he says he's going to start a frog army. A young TikTok user, he says he's based in the UK, noticed some type of eggs in a shallow pond near his home. In a recent TikTok, he claims he's gathered more than 1.4 million eggs that have hatched into tadpoles, and that next year I will create a giant pond for 10 million frogs and release a frog army. I'm kind of excited to see this frog army, I'm not going to lie.
Is there any danger to this frog army?
That's what some biologists are like. This could possibly not be good, etc. But I gotta say, I think it'll be kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, what's the army actually going to do? This frog army? It's not like he can arm them with weapons and they'll take over the United States of America. Or
be a bunch
like
of
that.
Frogs.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine.
Rest in peace to Tony Sirico.
Oh yeah. Tony Sirico is...
Sirico, are you a Sopranos person?
Oh my God, I love Sopranos.
I've never seen it. That's why I didn't know how to pronounce his last name.
So Tony Sirico played Paulie Walnuts, who is easily the best character on The Sopranos. For those who don't know Paulie Walnuts, he is a...
I'm going to call you Paulie Walnuts.
Small-brained enforcer.
There you go.
Who has a lot of very, very hilarious moments where he gets pissed off over something really small, beats somebody up, and has all sorts of super hot takes. His character makes the show, and per Tony Sirico, this is not that far off from who the guy actually is in real life. Like, he was a real life wise guy.
Love that.
So it's really sad that he passed away. He was sort of the comedic relief of The Sopranos every single episode.
I need to watch that. I just watched The Godfather the other day when James Caan died. And I felt like I immediately understood so many cultural references that I hadn't before.
There's an episode, and I actually think you can watch this episode without having watched the episodes before building up to it. It's called Pine Barrens. A lot of people think it's the best episode of The Sopranos, and it sort of focuses on Chris Moltisanti and Paulie Walnuts' character for the most part during the episode. And Paulie steals the show in that one. It's a great episode. So if you're ever going to watch one episode, Vanessa, you don't want to get into the whole show, watch Pine Barrens. That's the episode to watch.
People with mob ties dying. Rip Ray Liotta. That was earlier this year.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next on ESPN 97.5, 92.5, The Killer Bees. You got Jeremy Branham, Joel Blank. That's coming up.
Peace.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.